Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I was talking in the first hour about how individuals and events, things you can't always see, people you can't always see, will shape the leagues, the sports you watch, you root for. The history of these games we talk about. And great new book out on this focused on the NBA. Jake Fisher, who I didn't know was a Brooklyn-based journalist until just now. I lived in Brooklyn for 2 years and loved it. Mostly covers the NBA over at Bleacher Report. He's written for everybody. And his book is excellent, Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever, is out now. And he joins me now on the show. Jake, what's going on, buddy?
How you doing, man? Thanks for having me.
Love it. Where I know Brooklyn's a big, for people that don't know, Brooklyn would be the, like, fourth or fifth biggest city in America. I was in Park Slope with all the other dads. Where are you at?
I'm in Williamsburg right now looking out at the Manhattan skyline. It's not too shabby.
So what this means for folks that don't have New York experience is that Jake is cool, and we all know I'm not cool. That's where the cool kids hang out. Williamsburg's awesome. It is awesome. So I love the concept. I love the idea. How did you decide that this was, because obviously doing a first book is a massive undertaking. It's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's daunting. Why was this the thing you wanted to tackle the first time you decided to write 80 or 100,000 words on something?
Yeah, I mean, you got the word count pretty close. I started covering the league for Slam and for Liberty Ballers, the Sixers blog at SB Nation in 2013, right when Sam Hinkie took over Philly. And people forget, you know, it wasn't just Sam that really started tanking around that time. When he traded Drew Holiday to New Orleans, it was the same night, that 2013 draft, that the Celtics traded KG and Paul Pierce and started that whole rebuild. And Rob Hennigan was in Orlando moving on from Dwight Howard, and Ryan McDonough came to Phoenix. So I went to school in Boston, too, and I was moonlighting as an NBA reporter for Slam, and I'd go into TD Garden. Whenever those teams run by these analytical-minded executives came into town, it felt like I was kind of in the eye of the hurricane and like the Super Bowl of tanking, if you will. So this book over the years, it just kind of is a culmination of all the early reporting I got to do to start my career and the people I've overlapped with around the league.
I love that. Jake Fisher here on the show. Jake L. Fisher, Fisher with a C on Twitter. Built to Lose is the book. So let's dive into some of those teams, Jake. And I know that the Sixers history and story is still playing out, and it'll be interesting to see how this postseason goes for that organization and that team, and now Doc Rivers is the head coach. But Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are the product of that Hinkie approach back, God, that seems like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Would you, at this point, based on the book, based on your conversations, your reporting, your expertise, how would you evaluate the process and its success level given where we are now?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that it's been 5 years since Hinkie resigned, and it's been longer since he's been out of office than he actually ran the team. I think what you said is really all that really factors into it, right? They have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, and they're the number one team in the East, and by all accounts have the easiest path to the finals. And Hinkie's strategy was, in my opinion, and you're right, I talked to over 300 people from this book, players, agents, executives, coaches. From what I've gathered, I mean, I don't really think his plan was to intentionally lose for 3, 4, 5 years. I really think that the goal was just to acquire as many darts at the dartboard, knowing that these superstars would ultimately take you into championship contention. And that's what's happening with the Lakers and Phoenix and Utah and Milwaukee and Brooklyn. It's across the league. And I think you can throw it in his face that Michael Carter Williams and Nerlens Noel or Jahlil Okafor didn't work out, but yeah, he never had the hubris, I believe, that all of his picks were going to hit. And that's why he wanted to risk and gamble for injured guys upside like Embiid and trade down in the draft and get future assets to really prop this thing up for a long time. They didn't want to be a one-and-done title contender. They wanted to create a perennial threat to win the championship, and I think we're just seeing the beginning of it now.
Talking to Jake Fisher here on the show. Jake, the Boston example you cited, I find to be utterly fascinating, in part because, and you never know how chaos theory is going to affect things, and just you can act with the best of intentions and not get the results, really the best of moves and not get the results that you want. But that said, it certainly looks conceivable that post that trade that you referenced when Boston and the Nets, when the Nets were still in Jersey, basically swapped places they thought and what their teams were going to look like. It certainly looks like the Nets could win an NBA championship post that trade before the Celtics. Do you evaluate Danny Ainge's moves and that trade in a different light than most of us have over the last few years, given the fact that there hasn't been a championship?
I think the moves in that trade still ring as very triumphant, successful, being that the picks they got from Brooklyn turned directly into Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Now, you know, they got Al Horford from there in free agency and Gordon Hayward, and they trade for Kyrie Irving and, like, made the conference finals multiple times. They probably rebuilt this thing better than anybody, quicker than anybody, but it's the moves afterwards that I think have had them, you know, tail spinning down the Eastern Conference here, which it's something that came up a lot in the book. Like, as much as tanking is about getting these superstars who will lead you to the title, the challenge from there, it's pretty easy to build a bad team and then draft a guy in the top five, right? The challenge from there is then adding complementary pieces and, you know, with superstars, with like not in Boston, but guys like Zion and New Orleans or other small markets. Once you take those guys, the clock starts to tick immediately on doing things to keep them in your market. So I think where Boston has faltered through their rebuilding comparison to Brooklyn is, A, they're not New York, as much as Boston's a big market. They can't really open up two major cap spots and just think that Kyrie and Kevin Durant are going to walk in their door. But I think the struggles with the personalities and all the stuff behind the scenes that you mentioned at the top of all this, that's what plagued Boston here. It's been Tatum and Brown arriving ahead of schedule and kind of stepping on Kyrie's toes, and Marcus Smart, you know, his personality, as much as he is the fabric of that team, it doesn't rub everybody the right way. So I think it's been the retooling after the rebuilding that has been Boston's downfall, not necessarily that next Celtics trade.
Bleacher Report's Jake Fisher. He has written for every publication of note that's written about the NBA. I mean, this dude is the real deal. I love the grind. Built to Lose is the book. So an interesting time for the book to come out, and it's excellent. And we'll see how the play-in tournament affects things and the new draft lottery odds affect things. But I can't remember a time, 43, a time in my lifetime, where so many games seem to matter and so few teams seem to be trying to lose games, other than the Clippers. Nice job, Ty Lue. I mean, it's interesting. To what degree, how do you think tanking changes in the years ahead? And if it does change significantly, Jake, how do you think teams try to, as best they can, continue with an approach, if they're not going to have success in the short term, to acquire assets?
I don't think tanking will really change truly as long as they keep these lottery odds as they are. I mean, the book called How the Tanking Era Changed the League Forever, and it did, in that the lottery odds, you know, they dropped from 25 at the worst teams. Now there's a flattening, and the bottom three teams all get a 14% chance, and it's also influenced this play-in tournament. But I think we're still going to see teams play the lottery odds. We see OKC and Houston and Detroit and Orlando. I mean, they all did whatever they could to get into, you know, the best lottery position they could this season, even with those lesser odds, because this 2021 class is considered to be the best class since that 14 class that all those guys we talked about at the top, Hinkie, Rob Hennigan, Danny Ainge, others were drafting for, because that 14 class was the best class since 03. Now, it'll be different when there isn't a Zion or an Embiid or Cade Cunningham and Evan Mobley at the top, but I still think that there's benefits to playing this tanking game and playing the lottery. And I do worry, though, for those smaller market teams like Oklahoma City, if the league is going to continue to institute things in order to dissuade them from doing it even further. I wrote about it on Monday about how they're test running a G League midseason tournament next season, 21-22. That's going to be kind of like a start of season tournament, and they'll break the year into two kind of separate calendars. You know, the more they do that, like the smaller the sample size of actual games, you know, there's going to be less opportunities for teams to actually think they're out of the playoff bracket and out of the play-in conversation. But for smaller market teams who can't open up two cap spaces, like I said, and hope Kyrie and Kevin walk in the door, I think we're still going to see teams like the Thunder and the Rockets and Orlando play the lottery odds, because these guys mean more than anything in sports. Getting a superstar in basketball, it's more important even than landing a star quarterback in the NFL.
Jake Fisher here on the show. Jake, based on the I can't even imagine countless hours you spent on this book and the hundreds and hundreds of people you talked around the NBA, I'm curious the degree to which success in trying to get to the place people are trying to get in terms of finding that star through the draft, the percentage that is just drafting skill or drafting luck or just having, if you're Sam Presti, 4,000 picks in the next 5 years versus actual player development and the degree to which you think, based on your time on this book, that is you can have a real advantage in actually developing players in a way other teams can't.
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, from the top, from looking down at from the executive perch, I think being a successful general manager in the NBA is a lot about mitigating unforeseen variables. And, you know, when your guy is hurt and he falls, or someone trades ahead of you to draft your guy, how are you going to pivot successfully? But once you do land the player, if it does fall to luck, like there's some original reporting in the book, for example, where Devin Booker only falls to Phoenix at 13 because he refused to work out for Utah at 12 that year. So as much as the Jazz are here and they're, you know, a game up on Phoenix, that's a whole nother interesting monkey wrench and what if. But, you know, Phoenix gets Devin Booker, and they definitely had a coaching staff that grew him and molded him and helped him. And, you know, that Ryan McDonough front office ended up losing their jobs pretty much for their inability to pair Devin Booker with a point guard. But I think all the years they tried him out to be kind of a hybrid on-ball guy when he was scoring 70 points a game in Boston, you know, I think that helped him develop some pick-and-roll ball-handling chops and being able to penetrate like he's doing through this Lakers defense in the playoffs. So I think it's a whole mixed bag of everything you said. Like, you need to put in your work and prep and position yourself to get the guy. You do sometimes need a little bit of luck, like Embiid falling to 3 at Philly in 2014. Like, Cleveland and Milwaukee both had opportunities to take him, but their front offices just couldn't risk taking an injured big guy like that versus Hinkie, you know, had the timeline to do so. It really is all those factors, and that's why I do think it is so hard to get from the bottom back to the top. You need to just have a pretty clean run of good luck, and Philly's a perfect example too, where they had a lot of bad luck, and they're still here because of the work, I think, that coaching staff under Brett Brown and what the front office did under Hinkie and so forth.
Jake, and you just hit on it, I love it, the Sixers' willingness to lean into a longer timeline and the consequences that came with that, including the guy behind the process no longer being involved in any process of any significance in the NBA, led them to where they are today. It probably won't be a 7-year or 5-year plan, but when you look out at the teams that have tanked the last few years, that are trying to rebuild based on the things your book beautifully and brilliantly lays out, give me the most likely success story 3, 5, 6 years from now. Not everybody, but give one suffering fan base some hope that there will be a secondary process that will work for them.
I think if Minnesota keeps their pick here, I'm really bullish on what the Wolves are doing. I like the Thunder a lot too. I have a massive amount of respect for Sam Presti, and I think their new head coach did some good things, but the Wolves already have Karl Anthony Towns, who they tanked for during the book period when Kevin Love gives his trade request, and they sent him to Cleveland, and the Wolves fell down the standings and got the number one pick. So they've got Karl Anthony Towns, who the clock is running out on his time there, like we talked about, you know, building around these guys. His deal expires in 2024. But their number one pick from last year, Anthony Edwards, I think he's a real stud. He's not going to win Rookie of the Year behind LaMelo Ball. I think that's a mistake. I think what he's done under Chris Finch the last 2 months and the offensive creativity that Chris Finch brings to the game, I mean, he's the guy who really, when he was back as an assistant in Denver, you know, empowered Nikola Jokic to become the playmaker that he is right now. Jokic always had the skills, but Finch was the guy who really said, this guy's not a traditional big man. We have to put the ball in his hands in the perimeter and have him run DHOs and bring up the ball in transition. So I think they've got pieces. I think they've got a good coaching staff. I think they've got other guys like Malik Beasley and, you know, the McDaniels brother that they have. I always confuse the two. He's a long, athletic guy, and they had potentially another top five pick here. So I'm really bullish on the Wolves, and I think that they could be right back in the play-in tournament scenario next season if things break pretty well for them in the next, 12 to 14 months.
Dude, great book, great interview. Love the conversation. And congratulations. I can't even imagine. So my two closest friends have each written books in the last year. Reed Forgrave wrote a book on concussions, and another friend of mine is writing a book on Elon Musk. And one of the two of them have had that moment where Reed has, not my other buddy, where the book comes and he opens the box, right? And was it relief or joy when you opened that baby and saw those books?
Definitely relief and joy combination, but yeah. Also, holy crap, now we got to go sell this thing. And I hope that, the tree falling in the woods, I hope the book, I hope it falls in the woods and makes a sound type deal, I didn't nail that metaphor, but you know what I'm saying. So
I like it. I'm the king of mixed metaphors. That was like an A- by the standards of this show. And if you are listening, help it make a sound. Built to Lose, Amazon bookstores, buy it. It is a great read. It is worth your time. Jake Fisher, congrats, brother. Let's do it again, man. Really enjoyed the talk.
Absolutely. Happy to come back anytime.